Scene 2. 2 days out, a section of the promenade decked. Mildred Douglas and her aunt are discovered reclining in deck chairs. The former is a girl of 20, slender, delicate, with a pale, pretty face, marred by a self-conscious expression of disdainful superiority. She looks fretful, nervous, and discontented, bored by her own anemia. Her aunt is a pompous and proud and fat old lady. She is a type even to the point of a double chin and lorgnettes. LORGNETTES. She is dressed pretentiously, as if afraid her face alone would never indicate her position in life. Mildred is dressed all in white. The impression to be conveyed by this scene is one of the beautiful, vivid life of the sea, all about sunshine on the deck in a great flood and fresh sea wind blowing across it. In the midst of this, these two incongruous artificial figures, inert and disharmonious, the elder like a grey lump of dough touched up with rough, rouge, the younger looking as if the vitality of her stock had been sapped before she was conceived, so that she is the expression not of its life energy, but merely of the artificialities that energy had won for itself in the spending. Mildred, looking up with affected dreaminess. How the black smoke swirls back against the sky, is it not beautiful? Aunt, without looking up. I dislike smoke of all kind. Mildred, my great-grandmother smoked a pipe, a clay pipe. Aunt, roughing, vulgar. Mildred, she was too distant a relative to be vulgar. Time mellows pipes. Aunt, pretending boredom but irritated. Did the sociology you took up at college teach you that to play the goal, G-H-O-U-L, on every possible occasion, excavating old bones? Why not let your great-grandmother rest in her grave? Mildred, dreamily, with her pipe beside her, puffing in paradise. Aunt, with spite, yes, you are a natural-born goal. You are even getting to look like one, my dear. Mildred, in a passionless tone, I detest you, aunt, looking at her critically. Do you know what you remind me of? Of a cold pork pudding against a background of linoleum tablecloth in the kitchen of a... But the possibilities are wearisome. She closes her eyes. Aunt, with a bitter laugh, mercy for your candor. But since I am and must be your chaperone, in appearance at least, let us patch up some sort of armed truce. For my part, you are quite free to indulge any pose of eccentricity that beguiles you, as long as you observe the amenities. Mildred, drawling, the inanities. Aunt, going on as if she hadn't heard. After exhausting the morbid thrills of social service work on New York's East Side, how they must have hated you, by the way, the poor that you made so much poorer in their own eyes. You are now bent on making your slumming international. Well, I hope Whitechapel will provide the needed nerve tonic. Do not ask me to chaperone you there, however. I told your father I would not. I loathe deformity. We will hire an army of detectives and you may investigate everything they allow you to see. Mildred, protesting with a trace of genuine earnestness. Please do not mock at my attempts to discover how the other half lives. Give me credit for some sort of groping sincerity in that at least. I would like to help them. I would like to be some use in the world. Is it my fault? I don't know how. I would like to be sincere, to touch life everywhere, with very bitterness. But I am afraid I have neither the vitality nor integrity. All that was burnt out in our stock before I was born. Grandfather's blast furnaces, flaming to the sky, melting steel, making billions, then father keeping those home fires burning, making more millions, and little me at the tail end of it all. I am a waste product in the Bessemer process, like the millions. Or rather, I inherit the acquired trait of the byproduct wealth, but none of the energy, none of the strength of the steel that made it. I am sired by gold and damned by it, as they say in the race track, damned in more ways than one. She laughs mirthlessly. Aunt, unimpressed, superciliously. You seem to be going in for sincerity today. It isn't becoming to you, really, except as an obvious pose. Be as artificial as you are. I advise there's a sort of sincerity in that, you know. And after all, you must confess you like that better. Mildred, again affected and bored. Yes, I suppose I do. Pardon me for my outburst. When a leopard complains of its spots, it must sound rather grotesque. Grotesque. In a mocking tone. Purr, little leopard. Purr, scratch, tear, kill. George yourself and be happy. Only stay in the jungle where your spots are camouflage, in a cage that make you conspicuous. Aunt, I don't know what you are talking about. Mildred, it would be rude to talk about anything to you. Let's just talk. She looks at her wristwatch. Well, thank goodness, it's about time for them to come for me. They ought to give me a new trail, aunt. Aunt, affectedly troubled. You don't mean to say you are really going? The dirt, the heat might be frightful. Mildred, grandfather started as a puddler. I should have inherited an immunity to heat that would make a salamander shiver. It will be fun to put it to the test. Aunt, but don't you have to have the captain's or someone's permission to visit the stockhole? Mildred, with a triumphant smile. I have it, both his and the chief engineer's. Oh, they didn't want to at first, in spite of my social service credentials. They didn't seem a bit anxious that I should investigate how the other half lives and works on a ship. So I had to tell them that my father, the president of Nazareth Steel, chairman of the board of directors of this line, had told me it would be all right. Aunt, he didn't. Mildred, how naive age makes one. But I said he did, Aunt. I even said he had given me a letter to them which I had lost. And they were afraid to take the chance that I might be lying. Excitedly, oh, it's ho, so it's ho, for the stockhole. The second engineer is to escort me. Looking at her watch again, it's time, and here he comes, I think. The second engineer enters. He is a fine-looking man of 35 or so. He stops before the two and tips his cap, visibly embarrassed and ill at ease. Second engineer, Miss Douglas? Mildred, yes, throwing off her rugs and getting to her feet. Are we all ready to start? Second engineer, in just a second, ma'am, I am waiting for the fourth. He is coming alone. Mildred, with a scornful smile, you don't care to shoulder this responsibility alone. Is that it? Second engineer, forcing a smile. Two are better than one. Disturbed by her eyes, glances out to sea, blurs out. A fine day we are having. Mildred, is it? Second engineer, a nice warm breeze. Mildred, it feels cold to me. Second engineer, but it's hot enough in the sun. Mildred, not hot enough for me. I don't like nature. I was never athletic. Second engineer, forcing a smile. Well, you will find it hot enough where you are going. Mildred, do you mean hell? Second engineer, flabbergasted, decides to laugh. Ho, ho, no, I mean the stockhole. Mildred, my grandfather was a puddler. He played with boiling steel. Second engineer, all at sea, uneasily. Is that so? You will excuse me, ma'am, but are you intending to wear that dress? Mildred, why not? Second engineer, you will likely rub against oil and dirt. I can't be helped. It can't be helped. Mildred, it doesn't matter. I have lots of white dresses. Second engineer, I have an old coat you might throw over. Mildred, I have 50 dresses like this. I will throw this one into the sea when I come back. That ought to wash it clean, don't you think? Second engineer, doggedly. There's ladders to climb down that are none too clean and dark alleyways. Mildred, I will wear this very dress and none other. Second engineer, no offense meant. It's none of my business. I was only warning you. Mildred, warning? That sounds thrilling. Second engineer, looking down the deck with a sigh of relief. There's the fourth now. He is waiting for us. Will you, if you will come? Mildred, go on. I will follow you. He goes. Mildred turns a mocking smile on her aunt. An oaf, but a handsome, virile oaf. Aunt, scornfully, poser. Mildred, take care. He said there were dark alleyways. Aunt, in the same tone, poser. Mildred, biting her lips angrily. You are right. But would that my millions were not so anemically chaste. Aunt, yes, for a fresh pose, I have no doubt you would drag the name of Douglas in the gutter. Mildred, from which it sprang? Goodbye, aunt. Don't pray too hard that I may fall into the fiery furnace. Aunt Poser. Mildred, viciously. Old hag. She slaps her aunt insultingly across the face and walks over laughing gaily. Aunt screams after her. I said poser. Curtain. Scene 2 ended. Scene 3. The stockhole. In the rear, the dimly outlined bulks of the furnaces and boilers. High overhead, one hanging electric bulb sheds just enough light through the murky air laden with coal dust to pile up masses of shadows everywhere. A line of men, stripped to the waist, is before the furnace door. They bend over, looking neither to right nor left, handling their shovels as if they were part of their bodies with a strange, awkward swinging rhythm. They use the shovels to throw open the furnace doors. Then, from these fiery round holes in the black, a flood of terrific light and heat pours full upon the men who are outlined in silhouette in the crouching, inhuman attitudes of chained gorillas. The men shovel with a rhythmic motion, swinging as on a pivot from the coal, which lies in heaps on the floor behind to hurl it into the flaming mouths before them. There is a tumult of noise, the brazen clang of the furnace doors as they are flung open or slammed shut, the grating teeth gritting, grind of steel against steel of crunching coal. This clash of sounds stuns one's ears with its rending dissonance. But there is order in it, rhythm, a mechanical regulated recurrence, a tempo, and rising above all, making the air hum with the quiver of liberated energy, the roar of leaping flames in the furnaces, the monotonous throbbing beat of the engines. As the curtain rises, the furnace doors are shut. The men are taking a breathing spell. One or two are arranging the coal behind them, pulling it into more accessible heaps. The others can be dimly made out, leaning on their shovels in relaxed attitudes of exhaustion. Paddy, from somewhere in the line, plaintively, Yera, will this devil's own watch never end? Me back is broke. I am destroyed entirely. Yank, from the center of the line, with exuberant scorn. Oh, you make me sick. Lie down and croak. Why don't you? Always Biffin, that's you. Say, this is a cinch. This was made for me. It's my meat, get me. A whistle is blown, a thin, shrill note from somewhere overhead in the darkness. Yank curses without resentment. There's the damn engineer cracking the whip. He thinks we are loafing. Paddy, vindictively, God stiffen him. Yank, in an exultant tone of command. Come on, you guys, get into the game. She's getting hungry. Pile some grub in her. Throw it into her belly. Come on now, all of you. Open her up. All the men who have followed his movements of getting into position threw open their furnace doors with a deafening clang. The fiery light floods over their shoulders as they bend round for the coal. Reviewless of sooty sweet have traced maps on their backs. The enlarged muscles form bunches of heat, highlight and shadow. Yank, chanting a count as he shovels without seeming effort. 1, 2, 3. His voice rising exultantly in the joy of battle. That's the stuff. Let her have it all together now. Sling it into her. Let her ride. Shoot the piece now. Call the tone on her. Drive her into it. Feel her move. Watch her smoke. Speed, that's her middle name. Give her coal, you guys. Coal, that's her booze. Drink it up, baby. Let's see you sprint. Dig in and gain a lap. There she goes. This last in the chanting formula of the gallery gods at the 6-day bike race. He slams his furnace door shut. The others do likewise with as much unison as their varied bodies will permit. The effect is of one fiery eye after another being blotted out with a series of accompanying bangs. Paddy, groaning, me back is broke. I am bait out. Bait. There is a pause. Then the inexorable whistle sounds again from the dim regions above the electric light. There is a growl of cursing rig from all sides. Yank, shaking his fist upward contemptuously. Take it easy, dear, you. You did you things running this game, me or you? When I get ready, we move, not before. When I get ready, get me. Voices approvingly. That's the stuff. Yank, tell him, by golly. Yank ain't afraid. Good boy, Yank, give him hell. Tell him he's a bloody swine, bloody slave driver. Yank, contemptuously. He ain't got no nerve. He's yellow, get me? All the engineers is yellow. They got streaks a mile wide. Oh, to tell with him. Let's move, you guys. We had a rest. Come on, she needs it. Give her pep. It ain't for him. Him and his whistle, they don't belong. But we belong, see? We gotter feed the baby. Come on. He turns and flings his furnace door open. They all follow his lead. At this instant, the second and fourth engineers enter from the darkness on the left with Mildred between them. She starts, turns paler, her pose is crumbling. She shivers with fright in spite of the blazing heat, but forces herself to leave the engineers and take a few steps nearer the man. She is right behind. Yank. All this happens quickly while the men have their backs turned. Come on, you guys. He is turning to get coal when the whistle sounds against in a peremptory, irritating tone. This drives Yank into a sudden fury, while the other men have turned full around and stopped dumbfounded by the spectacle of Mildred standing there in her white dress. Yank does not turn far enough to see her. Besides, his head is thrown back, he blinks upward towards the mark, turning to find the owner of the whistle. He brandishes his shovel murderously over his head in one hand, pounding on his chest gorilla-like with the other, shouting, "Turn off that whistle, come down out a deer, you yellow brass-buttoned Belfast scoot you, come down and I'll knock your brains out, you lousy stinking yellow mutt of a Catholic modern bastard, come down and I will murder you, pulling that whistle on me, you, I will show you, I will crash her skull in, I will drive her teeth down her throat, I will slam your nose through the back of your head, I will cut your guts out of a nickel, you lousy boob, you dirty, crummy, muck-eating son of a." Suddenly he becomes conscious of all the other men staring at something directly behind his back. He wheels defensively with a snarling, murderous growl, crouching to spring, his lips drawn back over his teeth, his small eyes gleaming ferociously. He sees Mildred like a white apparition in the full light from the open furnace doors. He glares into her eyes, turned to stone. As for her, during his speech, she has listened, paralyzed with horror, terror, her whole personality crushed, beaten in, collapsed by the terrific impact of this unknown, abysmal brutality, naked and shameless. As she looks at his gorilla face, as his eyes bore into hers, she utters a low, choking cry and shrinks away from him, putting both hands up before her eyes to shut out the sight of his face to protect her own. This startles Yank to a reaction. His mouth falls open, his eyes grow bewildered. Mildred, about to faint, to the engineers who now have her one by each arm, whimperingly, "Take me away, oh, the filthy beast." She faints. They carry her quickly back, disappearing in the darkness at the left rear. An iron door clangs shut. Rake and bewildered, fury rush back on Yank. He feels himself insulted in some unknown fashion in the very heart of his pride. He roars, "Good damn you," and hurls his shovel after them at the door which has just closed. It hits the steel bulk head with a clang and falls clattering on the steel floor. From overhead, the whistle sounds again in a long, angry, insistent command. Curtain. Scene 4. The fireman's forecastle. Yank's watch has just come off duty and had dinner. Their faces and bodies shine from a soap and water scrubbing, but around their eyes, where a hasty dosing does not touch, the coal dust sticks like black makeup, giving them a queer, sinister expression. Yank has not washed either face or body. He stands out in contrast to them, a blackened, brooding figure. He is seated forward on a bench in the exact attitude of Rodin's The Thinker. The others, most of them smoking pipes, are staring at Yank half apprehensively, as if fearing an outburst, half amusedly, as if they saw a joke somewhere that tickled them. Voices: "He ain't ate nothing. By golly, a foller get grub in him. Devil a lie. Young feeder the fire, no feeder the face. Ha ha, he ain't even washed himself. He's forgot. Hey, Yank, you forgot to wash." Yank, sullenly: "Forgot nothing. To hell with washing." Voices: "It will stick to you. It will get under your skin. Give your the bleeding itch, that's what. It makes spots on you like a leopard. Like a pie-belled nigger, you mean? Better wash up, Yank. You sleep better. Wash up, Yank. Wash up. Wash up." Yank, resentfully: "Oh, say, you guys, lemme alone. Can't you see I am trying to think?" All, repeating the word after him as one with cynical mockery. Think? The word has a brazen metallic quality, as if their throats were phonograph horns. It is followed by a chorus of hard barking laughter. Yank, springing to his feet and glaring at them belligerently: "Yes, think. Think, that's what I said. What about it?" They are silent, puzzled by his sudden resentment at what used to be one of his jokes. Yank sits down again in the same attitude of the thinker. Voices: "Leave me alone. He's got a grouch on. Why wouldn't he?" Paddy, with a wink at the others: "Sure, I know what's the matter. This easy to think. He's fallen in love, I am telling you." All, repeating the word after him as one with cynical mockery: "Love? The word has a brazen metallic quality, as if their throats were phonograph horns. It is followed by a chorus of hard barking laughter. Yank, with a contemptuous snort: "Love? Hell! Hate, that's what. I am fallen in hate, get me?" Paddy, philosophically: "This would take a wise man to tell one from the other," with a bitter, ironical scorn increasing as he goes on. "But I am telling you, it's love that's in it. Sure, what else but love for us poor best in the Stockholm would be bringing a fine lady dressed like a white queen down a mile of ladders and steps to be having a look at us?" A growl of anger goes up from all sides. Long, jumping on a bench hectically: Insulting us, the bloody cow, and them bloody engineers, what right has they got to the to be exhibiting us as if we were bleeding monkeys in a menagerie? Did we sign for insults of our dignity as honest workers? Is that in the ship's articles? You can bloody well bet it ain't. But I knows why they done it. I asked a deck steward who she was, and he told me, "Your old man's a bleeding millionaire, a bloody capitalist. He's got enough bloody gold to sink this bleeding ship. He makes of the bloody steel in the world. He owns this bloody boat. And you and me, comrades, we are his slaves. And the skipper and mates and engineers, they are in slaves. And she's his bloody daughter, and we are all her slaves too. And she gives her orders as how she wants to see the bloody animals below decks, and down they takes her. There is a roar of rage from all sides." Yank, blinking at him, bewildered. "Say, wait a moment. Is all that straight goods? Long, straight as string?" The bleeding stewards, as once on them, he told me about her. "And what are we going to, I ask you? If we got her sweller, her insults like dogs, it ain't in the ship's articles. I tell you, we got a case. We can go der law." Yank, with abysmal contempt. "Hell, law." All, repeating the word after her as one with cynical mockery. "Law." The word has a brazen metallic quality, as if their throats were phonograph horns. It is followed by a chorus of hard barking laughter. Long, feeling the ground slipping from under his feet desperately. "As voters and citizens, we can force the bloody governments." Yank, with abysmal contempt. "Hell, governments." All, repeating the word after him as one with cynical mockery. "Governments." The word has a brazen metallic quality, as if their throats were phonograph horns. It is followed by a chorus of hard barking laughter. Long, hysterically. "We are free and equal in the sight of God." Yank, with abysmal contempt. "Hell, God." All, repeating the word after him as one with cynical mockery. "God." The word has a brazen metallic quality, as if their throats were phonograph horns. It is followed by a chorus of hard barking laughter. Yank, witheringly. "Oh, join the Salvation Army." All, sit down, shut up, damn fool, sea lawyer. Launce links back out of sight. Paddy, continuing the trend of his thoughts as if he had never been interrupted, bitterly. "And there she was standing behind us, and the second pointing at us like a man you did hear in a circus would be saying. In this cage, a queer kind of baboon that ever you did find in darkness a freesy. We roast them in their own seat, and be damned if you won't hear some of them saying they like it." He glances scornfully at Yank. Yank, with a bewildered, uncertain growl. "Oh, Paddy," and there was Yank roaring curses and turning round with his shovel to brain her, and she looked at him and him at her. Yank slowly, She was all white. I thought she was a ghost, sure. Paddy, with heavy biting sarcasm. This was love at first sight. Devil, a doubt of it. If you'd had seen the endearing look on her pale mug when she shriveled away with her hands over her eyes to shut out the sight of him. Sure, this was as if she'd had seen a great hairy ape escaped from the zoo. Yank, stung with a growl of rage. Oh. Paddy, and the loving way Yank heaved his shovel at the skull of her, only she was out the door, a grin breaking over his face. This was touching. I am telling you, it put the touch of home, sweet home, in the stokehold. There is a roar of laughter from all. Yank, glaring at Paddy menacingly. Ow, choke that off, see. Paddy, not heeding him to the others, and her grabbing at the second's arm for protection. With a grotesque imitation of a woman's voice. Kiss me, engineer dear, for it's dark down here, and me old man's in Wall Street making money. Hug me tight, darling, for I am afraid in the dark, and me mother's on deck marking eyes at the skipper. Another roar of laughter. Yank, threateningly. Say, what you trying to do, kid me? You old harp? Paddy, devil a bit. Ain't I wishing myself you did brained her?